It is time for our weekly visit with Elizabeth Barrett, the Reluctant Therapist. Good afternoon, Elizabeth, and what's on your mind today?
Well, Brad, I will say that I'm a little discombobulated today because it's too long of a story, and probably TMI, but I ended up having to get an x-ray done on a tooth in my mouth, of course, because where else would it be? Because I have this like ongoing weird little red spot that I've had for like 20 years and forever. And I know it's weird and it just kind of comes and goes. But the whole end of the story is for some reason I decided that this was the week right before, you know, we leave to go out of town that I need to have it looked at. And so... And so I feel like I've just been like a half hour behind my life today. And in all honesty, I feel like I've been a half hour or more or a day behind my life. This whole – and I live in quarters, you know, as a professor. So I live in the quarter system in my head. And next week is my last week of this quarter. And because, as you'll recall – I lost my voice at the beginning of the year. I lost a whole week of school, which means I've been chasing my curriculum the whole quarter, trying to catch up. And so I feel like I've been chronically out of breath, chasing, trying to feel organized. And today was another one where I had too many things on my plate and I kind of rushed in here and making notes. And the side note about this rushing discombobulated piece is that the dentist itself is a not comfortable experience for me.
I get you. Been there, done that.
And I have had some weird dentistry things starting back in the 1980s when I went to the painless dentist, which should have been my cue to begin with when I saw the sign, the painless dentist. And that ended up like years of messing with something that he messed with and wrecked and that ended up losing the tooth, blah, 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 blah. Point is, I have a lot of what I would call personal trauma around dentistry and anything, even if it's just getting x-ray, this the thought of going in starts this whole process of, oh my goodness, what are they going to find? How uncomfortable is it going to be? Just like really horrible feeling. The other piece of it is that I feel bad for dentists, for one, because most of their clients in some level have anxiety about coming to see them. So that's no fun. I mean, in some ways, it's like being a therapist, a psychotherapist. People have a lot of anxiety about coming to see us as well. But for the poor dentist, there's a lot of people have a lot of trauma. And especially if they've were abused when they were young or were assaulted or have any sort of like childhood trauma, the dentistry work tends to really trigger that.
True story. I once went to a dentist. He was formerly an Air Force dentist, but I had to get some very uncomfortable work done. He literally had a scar that ran from one eye down his cheek, and he looked like a Bond villain at the time. Did not do that much for my anxiety at that point, to be honest with you.
But isn't it interesting? Because when I do bring it up, people more often than not will say, oh, yeah, no dentist, no me, no bueno. So it's an interesting thing to think about, one, because I've been rushing for weeks, and two, going and doing things that make me slightly uncomfortable. And then three, I have a guest in the studio today who is a trauma specialist, and that was kind of coincidental, not planned with my experience today. But I thought, oh, this is going to be so great, because the thing about the word trauma is that it has become really elevated in the zeitgeist of social media, kind of like being a narcissist or family estrangement. They've been so overused in social media that everyone is self-diagnosing, you know, their own personal traumas. And it makes it really challenging then to differentiate the different levels of trauma that people experience and how the right treatment is found for them, and also how people respond to this idea of experiencing a trauma. Because one of the ongoing concerns about social media and influencer psychotherapy, which seems to be its own category right now, is that people hear something that feels familiar or they can grasp onto, and then they run with this idea that, oh, yes, this person's a narcissist. Oh, no, I must have been traumatized. Or yes, I need to estrange myself from my family. It's also awful. And then people that probably could have moved through these experiences of life, because we all experience things that feel traumatic but don't necessarily cause the trauma on the ACEs scale that I think we'll talk about that is a lifelong concern. People can have experiences with someone who's really self-absorbed and really difficult to live with, but not necessarily a narcissist. And then we also have experiences where we don't want to be around our family, and maybe our parents are the most, you know, challenging relationship we have, but doesn't necessarily mean we need to go to the level of estrangement. But because of social media psychotherapy, people are finding themselves self-diagnosed and taking drastic measures that are harmful, honestly, in the long run, but also prevent them in many ways from living their life in their normal. I'll say in their normal, that people step away and all of a sudden feel like, oh, I'm broken, or I'm damaged, or this, or I'm toxic, or, you know, all the buzzwords that come up. And then people stop feeling capable of taking agency for the choices that they're making in their lives. And as the reluctant therapist, that's my biggest concern, is that so many people cripple their own ability to function because they hear something and resonate with it and then deem it to be true about them. And therefore, they can no longer function in ways that are helpful.
They define themselves by it, and that's what their defining characteristic becomes in my experience.
Thank you for your humble opinion.
Well, it's humble.
Those are the things I want to talk about today, and I'm very excited that I have a guest just so happened scheduled to be in today. Leslie Bullock is a licensed psychotherapist and trauma specialist. She is also a licensed clinical social worker. She has worked in the trauma resiliency as a trauma resiliency model practitioner. She is a certified EMDR provider, and we've talked about EMDR, and we've had EMDR providers on the air, and I love that modality very much. Leslie is also an integrative psychotherapy trauma therapist and certified trauma-sensitive yoga facilitator. She has all of the cred, and using multiple modalities and bringing in the mindfulness in yoga in ways that I think are going to be fascinating. So enough about me. We're going to take a quick break and talk a little bit about how you can help support the station that I have so lovingly been a part of for almost 18 years or for 18 years during our spring pledge drive. This is a conversation with the reluctant therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. You will be invited to be part of the conversation at 805-781-3875. You can also find me after the show by sending me an email to elizabeth@thereluctanttherapist.com. Or send me a message through Instagram or Facebook. I'm happy to reply there as well. You can listen to previous shows at kcbx.org. Brad has my shows up and ready to go before we even leave the station. Or you can podcast the show wherever it is you get your podcasts, through NPR, Spotify, Apple Podcasts. If you find a conversation with a reluctant therapist, please leave a review so we can share the show with other people. So now we're going to take that quick break. Brad's going to talk to you about how you can support our station, and we'll be back to start our conversation right here on Central Coast Public Radio, KCBX.
You know, KCBX has been around for 50 years now here serving the San Luis Obispo community. Elizabeth has been part of KCBX for, as she said, 18 years. So, you know, how much good has the community received from KCBX? It's been very fortunate that the community has embraced it and supported it. And now more than ever, we need that support to continue our mission for another 50 years. As you know, federal funding that helped to defray a lot of our costs has been stripped away. And so now we have to dig even deeper and ask for more help from the folks that get the best benefit from it. And that is you, the local community. As you know, it is our spring pledge drive. We are asking that you step up your support. And so far, you've been doing a great job, but we still need your help. So if you would like to, you can call and speak to somebody at the front desk here during business hours at 800-549-8855, or you can visit us online at kcbx.org. No matter which way you decide to go, a little bit will go a long way. So don't let money scare you off when, for a price of a cup of coffee, maybe every month, you can do your part. So Again, call us at 800-549-8855 or visit kcbx.org and help support Central Coast Public Radio and The Reluctant Therapist.
Listen as your day unfolds. Challenge what the future holds. Try and keep your head up to the sky. Lovers, they may cause you tears. Go ahead, release your fears. Stand up and be counted. Don't be ashamed to cry. You gotta be bad. You gotta be bold. You gotta be wiser. You gotta be hard. You gotta be tough. You gotta be stronger. You gotta be cool. You gotta be calm. You gotta stay together. All I know, love will save the day. Herald what your mother said.
I'm Elizabeth Barrett, and this is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist, and my guest today is Leslie Bullock. Hello, Leslie.
Hello.
It's always fun to meet someone new, so I appreciate you coming in and sharing your wisdom around a topic that I find fascinating and don't have a lot of experience or training in, but you have a ton of training. You are a licensed psychotherapist, a trauma specialist. You practice the trauma resiliency model practitioner method. You're a certified EMDR provider, integrative psychotherapy trauma therapist, and a certified trauma-sensitive yoga facilitator. You've been practicing for around 20 years.
Yes.
Almost 7 years here on the Central Coast. I'm curious to know how you found your way into this specialty of trauma work.
Sure, yeah. Well, my background is as a social worker. I was trained undergraduate and graduate school as a social worker, and you know that's a little bit different, quite different from being a therapist. So I got sort of my, badges, I would say, of working with people in as a hospice social worker, a medical social worker, school social worker. And I didn't ever feel like it was quite my niche. I wanted to work deeply with individuals. And in there were great jobs, but it's a lot of putting out fires and linking people to resources. So as soon as I could, I started to get my hours for licensure so that I could become a therapist. And my first few years as a therapist, I was sort of a generalist, like most of us start, anxiety, depression, relationship stuff. And then it was more by, I don't want to say accident, if there are accidents, but I started to see a lot of people who had childhood sexual trauma. And so I didn't really, we would talk a lot about it, and I would do the history and analyze it. And I started to realize that a lot of the times people were dissociated or not quite present. Their bodies were braced. There was a lot of other stuff going on that talking wasn't getting into. Mm-hmm. And so then I said, you know, I'm interested in this. I was always interested in the mind-body connection. So I started to say, well, I'm going to read more about trauma and get some more training. So that all started the ball rolling. And I just really loved the work, and it really helped me to work with people, not just in a talking way, but in a body-centered somatic way.
And when you started doing this training, the idea of trauma work really wasn't as in the forefront as it is today. So was it challenging to find the training that was helpful?
That is true. Now there's trauma trainings everywhere. At the same time, I was also I'm also a yoga practitioner personally, and so I saw, I can't remember where, but an advertisement for Trauma Center, Trauma Sensitive Yoga. This was in 2017, so not so long ago. It's out of Boston, actually. And so I thought, oh, yoga and trauma, let's look at this. So I took the training, which was very long, and I went to Boston twice, and I learned so much about the physiology of trauma, how it affects people's brains and bodies, and that just got the ball rolling. And from there, we got more exposure in the trauma field. But that was really, I think, probably one of the best and most refined programs that I have taken in trauma training. Yeah.
And so, you have the training to do just anxiety, depression, as you said, grief,
yes,
transition work,
yeah,
that is very common, the things,
yeah,
that come in our office most often.
Right.
But when you're doing the trauma work, when you're assessing new clients, are you doing a special assessment for trauma? Or because there is some research now,
yeah,
that says that 2 out of 3 people have a marker of trauma in their experience. What have you found?
Well, what's happened for me is as I started to sort of market myself as a trauma therapist, generally I just get people with trauma history. So it's not – I don't really do a specific assessment of that, but of course I do the intake and can, you know, learn about what trauma they had. But I want to say that I specifically specialize in complex trauma, which is a very specific kind of trauma I could talk about if you
like.
Please do. And so generally the folks that I see have complex trauma. I wouldn't say 100%, but 75%.
Mm-hmm. And what makes it complex trauma as opposed to a traumatic event?
Yes. So complex trauma is – this gets a little technical how I define it, but it's differentiated from non-complex trauma, you could say, because it's there's four main things. One, it happened during developmental phases of someone's life. Mm-hmm. Two, it's longitudinal and chronic, meaning it happened over time repeatedly. Mm-hmm. Three, it happened in relationship with people, whatever the trauma was, often sexual, physical, emotional. And three, there's always an attachment disturbance that comes up. So that's pretty specific. And I think that's only come out probably since 2014 with Bessel van der Kolk's book, you know, Body Keeps the Score. Mm-hmm. So it's I think it's important to differentiate because it's not single incident. So someone could have trauma that's real trauma, but it might be an accident or mm-hmm. a natural disaster or something, which is real trauma, but it's not complex trauma.
Or not necessarily the death of a loved one is not necessarily complex trauma. It's expected normal
yes.
trauma of life.
Yes, yeah. yes. So it's a little different. I mean, that's not to say that I don't see people with single incident trauma, but I think the treatment is quite different mm-hmm. because it doesn't affect the body in the same way that complex trauma does. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
If you're just tuning in, my guest is Leslie Bullock, psychotherapist and trauma specialist. This is a conversation with a reluctant therapist. And when you talk about the complex trauma, I don't know if we want to jump into, you know, because I said at the top of the show, trauma has become kind of a buzzword on
yeah.
social media.
Yeah.
All the social media psychotherapists are using that to kind of draw people in. Mm-hmm. And I find that a little bit dangerous because then you have people who feel that their trauma is self-limiting mm-hmm. In ways that yeah. it might not be. So how do you differentiate the two so you don't minimize someone's yeah. feelings of being traumatized, mm-hmm. but at the same time help them understand that you can move through it like grief, mm-hmm. you know, or the loss during a catastrophe of some kind. How do you differentiate yeah. the two and help people to differentiate?
Yeah, I do agree that it's become overused and then gets watered down. And particularly with something as important as trauma, you don't want to water it down. So, mm-hmm. You know, I think, well, again, I go to a definition of how I distinguish, even just in an intake or in general, with trauma versus just being really stressed or overwhelmed or very saddened. Mm-hmm. Trauma, I think the markers for trauma are if someone has had an event or experience that exceeds their capacity to cope with it consciously, they have a sense of helplessness at that time during that event or experience, and they also feel disconnected from a sense of safety. Mm-hmm. And I think that's – well, they're all important, but helplessness, safety. So if someone – again, if someone has going through the loss of a spouse or a parent. I'm not going to say child because that's
a different –
that's a different
– itself.
It's very mm-hmm. much more different. But so I would just treat it differently, and it doesn't get as embedded in the body. When we're talking about childhood trauma, it becomes much more body-based.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And yeah, it sounds weird to say it, but there are some expected traumas, like the loss of a loved one.
Mm-hmm.
But the loss of a child is not an expected trauma,
right.
which makes it right more complex
yes.
to differentiate,
yes.
differentiate
yes.
the
yeah.
two.
Yeah.
And when someone comes in with complex trauma,
mm-hmm.
they're able to identify that. Not everyone remembers any childhood trauma. So how do you, right? How do you work with that? What are the what are the things you see, or what who comes into your office? Because I would imagine if someone doesn't remember a childhood trauma, how do they know to come to you and say, I have complex trauma? I guess that is a long way to ask that question.
No, it's a great question. And some people do say I have complex trauma, some don't. And I'd say, well, you know, eventually I'd say, well, this is what we're dealing with. But how do I know? Because it's true that severe trauma in childhood doesn't necessarily become encoded in the hippocampus and in the brain. And so the memory itself might not be explicit. Mm-hmm. But how we know is that people are having symptoms that are really dysregulating their life.
For example,
flashbacks, intrusive thoughts, panicky feelings, nightmares, not being able to sustain relationships. So all those things, their life's just sort of very chaotic and upset. Mm-hmm. And so if they have any of those symptoms, one or two or three of them, then we start going into the history. And eventually, I mean, there's some, you know, you can just tell a history of someone's childhood, and then I start to ask more deeper questions. Mm-hmm. So they might not remember, for example, and I know this is that they were raped by their parent or their brother. They might not remember that, but they have a fragmented memory of a dark room where they were held down or something like that, you know. Mm-hmm. So then I don't necessarily have to go into the memory deeply. That's another thing that I think is important. We don't have to dig up all the details. We have to work with what's happening in their body and in their life right now.
So let's talk about that. Mm-hmm. How does the body show up when there's complex trauma?
Yeah. So, you know, this is one thing I want to say about trauma is I think of it as both a noun and a verb.
Okay.
So the noun is the event, and the verb is how, what has happened in our body and how we respond. So we're working with the verb, right? How the body responds to that. So generally people with complex trauma are disconnected from their body in some way. They can't feel sensations very well. There's not a lot of interoceptive capacity. They are often bracing, not breathing well. They're very nervous. And again, they're just generally, and what I started to see in people was just either they were checked out, like really kind of zoned out, mm-hmm. or they were very panicky and restless.
Or hypervigilant.
Hypervigilant. Thank you. That's hypervigilant is a key one. Mm-hmm. Thank you for reminding me of that. Yeah. And that is when you always are perceiving there's a threat. Even with me, you know, it takes, with people with trauma, as you know, as a therapist, it takes many sessions before someone can trust you and feel like you're not a threat, you're not a danger to them. So that's the very first thing, is establishing a sense of safety, mm-hmm. and not just go right into the hard stuff.
Yeah, you know, I always thought interesting as well that there's a healthy amount of reluctance that people have to just jumping in and sharing their whole life story. Mm-hmm. And then there's the reluctance that leads to that hypervigilance, that fear there's going to something bad's going to happen.
Yeah.
But then conversely, there's people who come in and they're always dumping, right? They're just open and sharing with anyone, which makes them also vulnerable, which is another, right? It can go both ways in some way.
Yes. But generally, if they are talking a lot, it's generally avoiding, right? We're mm-hmm. not getting to what we need to be. It's just, that's again sort of a hyperness of an anxiety that's showing up. Yeah. But, you know, the story is important, but it's not where the work is.
Mm. All right.
Yeah.
The story is important, mm-hmm. but it's not where the work is. Yeah. I think that's a really key piece of mm-hmm. that. Because I'll tell my trainees, you know, if a client says to me, that's a great question, I know I'm going down the wrong path, because they're loving that question because it avoids them having to talk about the things that are deeper for them.
Yes.
And so talk a bit about that, that if the story is not just the story, but it's underneath that.
Yeah, so the story, you know, is telling a narrative of our lives that we all do is cognitive, mm-hmm. right? You're still in your head, so to speak, and you're putting words to it. And it's important, But where the harm is, where the injury is, again, with trauma, is in the body. Mm-hmm. So we want to move the attention from the, after I get the story, I have to have pieces of the story, of course, is to move attention to what one is feeling in the body. Mm-hmm. So sometimes even if someone's talking, I'll say, let's just pause for a moment and settle in and drop into your body and notice what you might feel. And that's something actually I'd probably do every session. Like, notice your breath. Are you breathing shallow or deep? Or how are your legs feeling? So just increasing one's capacity to feel into their bodies. That's the very first stage. And oftentimes that's really difficult for people, or uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. That's a key word. It's not going to be comfortable. So helping people to develop a resiliency to be with the discomfort. Mm-hmm. In the body, because trauma is embedded in the body, not in the cognitive brain. So we want to not necessarily focus on the details of the story, but what happened inside of you? How did your body respond? Did you fight, flight, or freeze? Generally, it's freeze with complex trauma. Mm-hmm. So you shut down, and the more that we shut down, the less we can feel what's happening.
Well, and I would imagine that when someone who's lived outside of their body for a long time is asked, let's drop into your body, that into itself can be challenging. They don't know how to feel things.
Yeah.
So they're probably saying, I feel nothing.
Yes, oftentimes. Yes. I mean, that's definitely a learning curve, mm-hmm. Which I go slowly with. But, you know, as I said, even before we start talking, I'll say, let's just take a moment, settle in, and focus on your breath. And some people, that's really hard to do. So I would say it's a skill. It's a rewiring. Mm-hmm. But, yes, sometimes I feel nothing. Mm-hmm. But we keep working. We keep working.
And so when you started doing this training, mm-hmm. what was the biggest shift from how you'd been working in your traditional mm-hmm. psychotherapy model mm-hmm. to the trauma-informed model?
Yeah. Well, definitely less talking, more attuned to the person's body themselves, the body language. I'm trying to. Can you say the question again?
Because you know, people who go for traditional psychotherapy mm-hmm. expect that it's in the conversation and by mm-hmm. talking about mm-hmm. the thing that has been troublesome, mm-hmm. traumatic, painful, the talking is the freeing mm-hmm. of the story. Mm-hmm. And so I'm curious how your modality changed in that processing piece. Because mm-hmm. I think one of the challenges of talk therapy has been, yes, the talking can release the story, but if there isn't a rewiring or reprocessing, the story still remains. And so what is the short answer of how that shifts? Because there's mm-hmm. still talk therapy involved.
Right.
But it's that reintegration for the person, to me, that feels that it's been missing from talk therapy.
Right, right. Yeah, I mean, there is insight to be gained from talking through it. But again, I guess a big difference is when someone's talking, again, I will pay more attention to their face, mm-hmm. their body. And I will interrupt and say, well, right now, what are you feeling inside? So I'll interrupt people, hopefully, you know, in a kind way. they're saying something that's actually pretty dramatic or severe, but they're saying it with a really flat voice. I would say, let's just pause and notice what you feel as you're saying that. Either that or someone's very hysterical, if you will, or very upset. Again, mm-hmm. I would pause. Let's drop the dialogue and feel what that feels like in your body. Because that's where the learning is, the transformation, the integration is.
And so I think about Carl Rogers and humanistic psychotherapy, which is very much about letting the client lead. Mm-hmm. This sounds like it's more gestalt-y. You're more active and more challenging in the process.
Yes, I would say so. But unconditional regard stands always.
Yes, unconditional positive regard is like on everybody's
it's on my
placard.
Yes.
that and empathy and genuineness.
Yes, yes. But no, I do think it's quite different from that. It is more gestalt, very much in the moment. I don't want to stay caught up in our heads.
Yeah. If you're just tuning in, My guest today is Leslie Bullock, licensed psychotherapist, trauma specialist. This is a conversation with a reluctant therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett, and we're spending the hour kind of exploring the field of trauma therapy and also incorporating the somatic body work into the trauma therapy, which we'll be talking about for the rest of the hour. You're also invited to join the conversation at 805-781-3875. But for now, we're going to take a quick break. We're going to talk about all the ways you can support this fabulous station, and then we'll be back to continue our conversation right here on Central Coast Public Radio, KCBX.
Fascinating conversation with Elizabeth Barrett, the reluctant therapist, and her guest, and just a great example of the kind of thoughtful programming that KCBX has bringing to our community, has been bringing to our community for over 50 years. And we want to continue on for another 50 years. If you're a regular supporter of KCBX, we want to say thank you. If you've not yet supported KCBX but are a listener, this is the time to get off the fence and do what you can. Give us a call at 800-549-8855, or you can donate online at kcbx.org. We'll be back with more of a conversation with the reluctant therapist in just a moment.
I'm Elizabeth Barrett, and this is a conversation with a reluctant therapist with my guest today, Leslie Bullock. And I've also invited another guest into the studio to talk about an event that's coming up March 21st, because we're talking about trauma today and all the different ways it can impact our lives. Leslie's talking about complex trauma that is chronic and many times lifelong. But there are those traumatic things that we experience in our everyday life, some expected, like grief and loss and transitions, and then some unexpected, maybe like a political system that is dragging you down, or an unexpected war, or the ways that we feel divided as a culture. And so one of my listeners, Sean. Hello, Sean. Are you there?
Yes, I am, Elizabeth. How are you?
I'm good. So Sean has decided to do something about the overwhelm that people are experiencing in the way of the world right now, and you're organizing the Beautiful Movement, a celebration of liberal democracy, coming up on March 21st. Sean, what was your inspiration? And tell me more about it so people can participate.
Well, I noticed in my engagement on social media mostly that boy, this is going to be the understatement of the world. Everything was negative, you know, and we're being manipulated towards negativity by some very large forces in the world, and then also by the various marketing algorithms that constantly hit us with negativity. And it occurred to me that if we're constantly saying, you know, everything is horrible in our system, then why would anybody fight for that system? So we've got to start to reframe this, or start recognizing what's good in our system, what actually still works in our system and has for a very long time. And I also think that we need gatherings that aren't just angry, that aren't just work, because either we're advocating for something, or we're stuffing envelopes, or we're angrily doing this, that, or the other. We need to be coming together as a community from time to time, just to get together with our people that are decent people and have a good time. So that's why I created the Beautiful Movement.
I love that idea, because we need to be able to take a breath at some point, because it can feel like we're under siege. And if we're not constantly angry, then we're not doing our part, but we still need to take a breath.
Yeah. And I'm seeing, as you are, I'm sure, and your guest, just so much exhaustion, where people are just, they're pummeled, and so often they're pummeling themselves with information. I don't want to like lecture anybody at this point, but I decided very early on in this process, I get my news from Associated Press articles. Mm-hmm. I don't watch CNN. I don't watch anything. I read, I get the information that I need, and then I move on with my activism, because otherwise I'd be paralyzed with depression.
Yes. Yes. So, it's easy to get there.
Yeah.
So tell, so for people to participate, tell, give the details. What are the deets on your event?
Well, we're going to have at noon, we're going to have some, actually before noon, probably starting 11 or so, we're going to have a drum circle leading up to it. At the gazebo there in Mitchell Park, and then we'll have some speakers around noon, including myself, William Ostrander, who ran for he's run for both Congress and State Assembly here. He's going to be speaking. Joel Komen, who is envisioning global democracy, digital democracy, he's a really interesting fellow who's going to be speaking, and then also Brenda Mack, who is a local community activist. She's a little firebrand, so that's going to be fantastic as well. And then afterwards, we're looking at, we've got a live music by Mana Mana, and then we'll probably have some games and community discussion and things like that as well in the park. So if you come, bring a you know, picnic for yourself if you can, a picnic chair if you've got it. We're going to try to have some chairs there, some refreshments. And just come ready to have fun. So
Saturday, March 21st, Mitchell Park in San Luis Obispo, in the gazebo in the whole park. And the Big Beautiful Movement, a celebration of liberal democracy. So come join up with friends who also are going to want to feel like they can have joy as well as activism.
Thank you.
Yeah, Sean, I really appreciate organizing this because I do. I think it is a missing piece. Everyone feels like they're running in a million different directions, trying to put out little fires, and it's nice to recognize that we're, that you're not alone, and that sense of community is so healing. And that sense of not being isolated and sitting on your phone and doom scrolling.
Yeah, and I think we also we're being cast. The people who are against a lot of the horrible things that are happening are being cast as some horrible enemies of America. So this whole thing is it's about as America-centric as you can get. I will dare them to play it, to tell us that we're anti-American after that. They would have to stomp on the flag because we are going to be the flag. We're going to be liberal democracy as it – I mean, there's so many principles that are based in liberalism here. You know,
fabulous.
Conservatism is not our heritage. That is, you know, Afghanistan's heritage. We have a liberal heritage here. And we need to defend it and celebrate it.
Thank you, Sean. So I invite everyone on Sean's behalf to join them on March 21st at Mitchell Park, starting around noon. Bring a picnic, a day of celebration. And if people want more information, is there a contact website or email?
They can email me at theamericanvictoryproject@gmail.com. That's the American Victory Project.
Fabulous.
Yeah.
Sean, thank you for taking the time to call in, and I hope it's a fabulous event with lots of support.
Yeah, I wish you could be there next time.
Next time, for sure. Take good care, Sean.
Thank you so much.
This is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett with my guest, Leslie Bullock, and we're talking about trauma and the many ways that it shows up. Complex trauma can be a lifelong chronic experience, and then there are traumatic events. What do you think, just as a side note, are we experiencing now as a liberal democracy? Is this a complex trauma? Because it's been happening for many years now. It doesn't feel like it's just one event. How would you diagnose us?
Well, I'm really glad you brought up that, because I do want to say that the trauma that we've been talking about to this point is individual interpersonal trauma.
Yes.
And I don't think we can talk about trauma without talking about collective societal trauma.
Yes.
So, and that has been, you know, forever. It's when specific groups of people have been dehumanized, oppressed, you know, murdered for years, and that manifests in communities. And I think like it would be approached in a different way. And those communities actually have in some ways become more resilient because they have each other. But that aside, I don't – complex trauma, to be clear, is childhood trauma.
Mm-hmm.
So I wouldn't pair it with what's happening now. I would say it's complicated, right?
I'll use that.
It's complicated, but not complex in the – in the way that
strict
we use
definition.
It.
Yeah.
But is it lifelong? For sure, particularly for a lot of people.
Yeah,
and it's affecting all, well, maybe not all of us, but many of us as we're experiencing what's happening. I wouldn't call it a personal trauma, but I am definitely activated, angry, and I want to do something.
Well, and then again, in that definition of trauma, we'll say complicated trauma, that feeling of being helpless or hopeless is very apparent. For I feel that many people do. Feeling like you can't do anything to stop it, that fight, flight, or freeze is absolutely being activated. Mm-hmm. So yes, there is kind of that complicated piece of if someone calls, you know, in and says, because those are the calls I'm getting of the overwhelm and the stress and that sense of isolation. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so I want to kind of pivot it then back to your work because the kind of the cornerstone of what you do is that mind-body connection with the trauma work, that it's not just about processing through words, but there's that bodily connection. How do you, and you talk about, you know, having your training in trauma sensitivity yoga practice. How do you utilize that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, in trauma-sensitive yoga, the training, one of the things that we learned or that I learned is with complex trauma that is experienced as a child or in some developmental phase, is we lose a sense of power. That's one thing. So part of working with someone with that kind of trauma is to help them be empowered. And one way to do that is to learn to inhabit your body. I know that's a kind of a weird term, but like oftentimes we just don't notice our body. We just go around on autopilot. So it's in helping people to feel that they have a body. And one way that we can do that is through movement. And like right now, I'm just lifting around just to say, like, how do you feel if you lift up your arms and you feel your fingers and the air on your fingers? So you're helping people to become more empowered by connecting with their body. So empowerment is one. Another thing that's taken away when we've been traumatized is choice. The particular type of trauma I'm talking about. So it's helping people to realize that they have a choice in how they move and what they say and what they think. So there's a big emphasis on developing people to have choice. So I never start with, we're going to do this. I would say, well, would you be open to the idea of like maybe standing up and stretching or doing a hand movement. And so it's invitational. And there's also a sense of being able to, again, help them feel into the body. Like if you're in a particular pose or even if you're just sitting, I ask people, what do you feel like in your thighs right now? So it's bringing people back to their bodies, back to a sense of empowerment and choice in a very invitational way, because most trauma occurs within power dynamics, right? Mm-hmm. With a big power differential. So as a therapist, the last thing you want to do is to be the power person.
Right.
You don't want to be power over. You want to maybe be power with, but mostly enabling the person to feel like, oh, I can choose now. Mm-hmm. I'm not a victim or I don't have to identify with this story. I can be myself, whatever that
is. And so once they identify that experience in their body, what happens?
They slowly start to feel more embodied, feel better, mood improves, more, to use this common word, regulated. Like the nervous system is dysregulated with traumatic events. I mean, we're all sort of dysregulated right now. But to help, what do they mean by regulating your nervous system? Is being able to either have the tools to calm yourself down, or if necessary, if you're in a real collapse state, to activate your body. Mm-hmm. So in those instances, I would actually have people like start running in place and start to feel their body or to get more active. So whatever the body needs to regulate itself.
Right.
But we have to discern what that is. And I have the person sort of try to come to, what do you need to do right now? Do you need to run away or do you need to shout? So we really try to bring the body into, what does it need to do?
My guest today is Leslie Bullock, and we're talking about trauma from her position as a licensed psychotherapist and trauma specialist. Our number is 805-781-3875. And Joel, thanks for waiting. You're on the air.
Hi, how are you doing?
We're doing well. What's on your mind today?
Okay, so I'm going to be a speaker at Sean's gig, but I'm really here to talk about sort of the macro trauma and try to understand, how does agency or the ability to actually feel like you're having an effect or you're moving in a positive direction, how is that viewed related to trauma and helping people overcome trauma? How important is that?
Thank you, Joel.
Yeah, it is so important. I mean, agency is the word, another word perhaps for choice, right? Because when we feel helpless and hopeless, we lose that. So I think it's extremely important in macro collective trauma. And, you know, how we do that, you know, it really varies on the population, but one of the ways that people do or help them feel better is going to protest. Like, I have some agency, I can do something. Now, does that change things? I'm not sure. That's another discussion. But to help people know that there are things that we can do to make an impact, if not in the larger scale, even with ourselves, like how we are in the world. So, yeah.
So I'm gonna just pose this because this is what I'm working on. I founded a group called the IOD Nations, International Online Democratic Nations, and our agency is this. I'm actually building a group right now, this won't surprise anybody. I'm of the opinion that men have gotten us into the situations we're in, and we're waiting for the women to clean it up like they always do. But we're approaching it from a different way, to give agency to people by establishing the International Online Democratic Women's Nation.
Well, that works out perfectly for Women's History Month. If someone was interested, how would they get involved?
IODnations.org.
Fabulous.
IODnations.org. But the idea is to give that agency and give people a way that they can work together and work towards common goals as a way of dealing with some of the trauma that we're experiencing.
Thank you, Joel. I appreciate that, because, again, that idea of getting agency and feeling like you can make a difference can help lift people out of depression as well. And I would tack on to yours, Leslie, is that when we do that personal work, I get up and I do yoga in the morning, or I go for a swim, or I eat something healthy, like that care for the self makes me feel like I have agency over myself. So therefore, I have the energy then to do work that might not have a noticeable impact, but I can do my part. But I think what you were saying is it starts with that self piece, that if you're feeling cared for, you're feeling like you have the choice to get up in the morning and do what you want to do and do it well. When you feel complete in that way, it gives you that sense of power to tap into other events. And I think quite often people miss the self part, the self agency, doing those things that are good for you, and they put all their energy externally into protesting or writing letters or getting involved, and it just becomes a depletion.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, true.
So there is that danger in that as well, is that we do have to kind of focus in and do that work of how am I caring for myself on a day-to-day, having lunch with a friend.
Yes, yes, yes. And I have to say, there's so many, again, peoples that don't have that sense of agency, don't have the ability to even do that, so and can't help themselves. But if we can, and you and I have the opportunity to do that, to use our agency to help ourselves and help others, there's no other choice. Yeah.
So we're talking about kind of the tapping into the body, because that feels like the key through line, almost the difference between traditional talk therapy and then, you know, you talked about Bessel van der Kolk's The Body Keeps Score, which is a wonderful book if you're interested in more information about trauma. Understanding that through line of the body connection has to be addressed almost in any psychotherapeutic container, that feeling like you can move. And there's that piece of feeling safe in your body, because I hear that quite often. I don't feel safe in my body. So when we say enter into your body, right, mm-hmm. see what that feels like, for mm-hmm. someone who doesn't feel safe inside of their body, mm-hmm. that would be a great block.
Mm-hmm. Right. So we, yes. Don't even know what that might mean, or that they don't feel safe. But sometimes then a little psychoeducation about hypervigilance or shutting down is important. But then I would bring in, can I bring in some movement? I might say, like just, you know, putting your hand on your heart, and can you feel your heartbeat, or your hand on your belly and feel your belly rising and falling? And that doesn't sound like therapy, but it's helping people to feel their body. I have a body. I mean, some of the early research through trauma-sensitive yoga was women would say, I don't have a body. I don't exist.
My neck.
Mm-hmm. Right. So whatever way that might be, movement, that might be voice. Sometimes I use, you know, sounds or shouting, being able to say no, that kind of thing. So people, again, start to feel that agency. And eventually, I don't think I've ever had a client who isn't able to start to feel their body, but it's uncomfortable. So we always have to get through that sort of, well, it's not a breakthrough, but it's a process of building resiliency to tolerate discomfort, mm-hmm. the knot in your stomach, the tight throat, the shoulders, to be, oh, okay, that's uncomfortable. How can we relax into that? Mm-hmm. So it's I wouldn't say it's subtle, but it takes time.
So leading into the time piece, when someone mm-hmm. comes in and to work mm-hmm. with complex trauma, mm-hmm. how long do you mm-hmm. usually work with them?
As long as they'll stay. No. Usually, that was a joke. at least 6 months, but generally an average is 2 years.
2 years.
Yeah.
Because I think it's important to talk about that, that there is not a 10-session fix for that.
No.
That it's a commitment to really doing an extended period of work.
Yeah. It's definitely a commitment. And some people, you know, leave. Mm-hmm. For a variety of reasons. But generally, I would say an average of 2 years, a year and a half, yeah.
And then as we come to the end of our hour, I want to add one more piece to the story that has been also very social media'd, uh-huh. is the idea of the inner child work. Mm. And how does the inner child work connect to, or does it, to the mind-body work? Because it's been kind of the cornerstone of a lot of trauma assault work for years, tapping back into that inner child and mm-hmm. having those conversations. Is there a crossover between the two, or are they two different things? And where is the inner child in complex trauma?
Yeah. In complex trauma, the inner child is the wounded child, mm-hmm. right? So I would say that's the part of you that was hurt. And again, this could be over a period of 10 years. So I like that term. I use the term, but I don't use it in the sense of, I mean, sometimes I might talk to that part of you that's wounded, but part of it is being able to step back and see that it was in the past. So that child that's still running the show because she or he is still living in fear and living in bracing. So I'm being able to step back and say, okay, he was hurt, address that, but coming back to the present in the adult body. Right. But of course, honoring the wounds of that child. But as long as the traumas were traumatized, that inner child we're reacting from that place. Yeah.
And so how does the movement, mm-hmm. Are we talking about moving energy or are we moving story? When you talk about that movement. What, mm-hmm. you know, you're bodily moving, but what are you moving?
Well, I would say that you're moving energy, but the idea of moving is to be able to feel your body.
Okay.
That's the primary.
That's the simple answer.
Yeah.
So it's about actually re-inhabiting who you are.
Yes, okay. Yes. There's a term that they use in trauma-centered yoga called interoception, which is the ability to feel sensations in your body. Mm-hmm. And when you can feel something, then you can, again, have agency on it and act on it or make a different choice. But That's the main reason. It's not necessary to move something out. I mean, I guess there can be release in movement. I definitely want to say that. But I wouldn't say that that's my primary take on it. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so if someone is listening today and they would like to get in touch with you, are you still seeing people? How would they connect with you?
Yeah, I can be reached at www.lesliebullocklcsw.com.
That's B-U-L-L-O-C-K, mm-hmm. Leslie, L-E-S-L-I-E, Leslie Bullock, LCSW.com. Mm-hmm. And what can someone expect if they first reach out?
Either a phone call or an email. I would return and talk about the possibility of working together. Yeah.
Well, I'm sorry that the hour went by so quickly. Do you have a last thought you'd like to share?
Just that I'm grateful to have this conversation. I think it's important to talk about trauma. And as you started with, also important to sort of qualify what it is, that it's not just overwhelm or stress, which we all have and which is important to address. But it's a very specific body-based experience that keeps people sort of trapped and unable to fulfill their full potential. Yeah.
Thank you, Leslie mm-hmm. Bullock, for spending the hour with me. This has been A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. You can find me at elizabeth@thereluctanttherapist.com. You can send me an email. You can also find me on Instagram and Facebook. You can leave me a message there. You can listen to previous shows at kcbx.org. And you can podcast our show if you'd like to listen at your convenience or share with friends wherever it is you get your podcasts. A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. Please leave a review so other people can find us as well. As always, thank you for tuning in and being a part of my community, for making it possible for me to share this show with you for the last 18 years. It's my honor to do this week after week. I'll be here next Tuesday at 2 right here on Central Coast Public Radio, KCBX.